And welcome to Talk Louisiana. I'm Julie Baxter Payer. I'm sitting in this morning for Jim Engster. And it's a pleasure to be with you this morning, right in the middle of the holiday season, Tuesday, December 11th. We have a great lineup for you this morning. You're not going to want to miss this hour. We have coming up in the second half of our hour a well-known record producer from here in Baton Rouge. He's out with a new book just in time for Christmas to tell his story. S.J. Montalbano, you all know him. You knew his brother Mickey, who untimely passed away from us just a few weeks ago, and we miss him already. But S.J. will be here to recount all those stories you love to hear, the Sam Montel story. I'm leaving it up to me. But first, right here in Baton Rouge, an LSU Department of Physics and Astronomy assistant professor has been making international headlines. She is responsible for the research that prompted the first star ever to be named after a woman. CNN has called her accomplishments one of the top 10 space stories of 2018. And we are so fortunate this morning to have Tabby Boyajian joining us now on Talk Louisiana. Tabby, good morning. It's great to have you on the show.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for making time. We know you're very busy and you've had a lot of coverage lately of your research. And so this star that I understand is now known as Tabby's star that started all the buzz about you is more than 1,000 light years away. And we understand it's baffling astronomers. When did you first observe this star?
Well, the initial discovery of this star was published in 3 years ago in 2015. And I was working on it with dozens of other astronomers and amateur astronomers for a few years before that, trying to figure out what was going on. So it's been a while that we've known about it and that we've been trying to figure out what's going on, and we've been collecting more data to, you know, find clues to, you know, put together ideas on what's happening.
And was this all research that was going on at LSU, or did you start this somewhere else?
I started this when I was a postdoc at Yale University, and I moved here in 2016 to join the faculty in the Department of Physics and Astronomy, and continued doing this work now with several other faculties and graduate students and undergraduates that have been involved.
What attracted you to LSU to come continue your research?
Well, I think I love the South. I love the culture here. I came, my academic pedigree is from a big state school, so it kind of felt like home, and I felt like I could really make a difference here, and, you know, the student body and educating them in science.
Oh, well, we're so glad to have you here in Baton Rouge. Now, we understand your star. The technical, I guess, name or tag for it is KIC8462852. What is it that's so unusual about this star?
Well, the star was first identified for having very strange brightness fluctuations. So a normal star would just have a constant brightness with time, and this one was constant most of the time, and then it would get dimmer in these kind of sporadic periods. Some were very, very large dimming events. They would last for, you know, a week at a time, and they looked just like nothing else that we could identify.
And so what does that do then as a scientist? Where do you go start looking to try to understand this star?
Well, you try and collect clues to, you know, try and pull together a story on, you know, learn more about the star itself and see if there's anything else unusual about it. So we would collect other observations of the star. We started a huge monitoring campaign. So we started monitoring the star's brightness for, you know, every day for the past, you know, 3 years, and to see if we can, you know, see it doing this again in real time.
And do you involve students in this tracking and the research?
Yeah, so there's been several graduate students that I've been working with and undergraduate students that have been involved in several areas of the research for the star. We've actually taken observations at the Highland Road Park Observatory of this star to, you know, try and figure out what's going on. And so it's been a very involved process with, you know, a lot of members of the community.
And what kind of equipment do you have to use to out at the Highland Observatory to be able to actually see this and observe it and make the findings that you need?
Well, the star itself is, you can't see it with your naked eye, but you just need a kind of modest-sized telescope, which is what they have out there, and what we call a CCD camera. And so this is something that can, you know, take in the light and record it over time throughout the night, and so you can graph it the next day and try and learn what's going on.
Do you feel like you're getting support from the Baton Rouge community for your research and from your students from the LSU community?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is pretty much science in action. You know, everybody is curious to find out what's going on. This is it's really exciting, even for me, to, you know, open up my laptop and see what's happening right now. And we can do that because we're, you know, continuously collecting data. And we cannot predict anything that is happening with this star. And that's what makes it really exciting. And I think the community itself also feels this way. And in a sense, you know, it kind of tells us that, you know, there's so much for us to learn out there in the universe. Like, we don't understand it all. And this is, you know, this one star has become an example of that.
Do you have any idea how old this star is?
Well, we think it's not too young and not too old. So it's about middle age, so a few billion years old. So in its core, it's still burning hydrogen to helium, as our sun does. And so not much different from that. It is a little bit more massive than our own sun, but it's a pretty normal kind of middle-aged star.
So it's larger than our sun.
Yeah, a bit more massive than our sun. But in the grand scheme of things, it's not too far different from our sun.
And I understand it's called an F star, F as in Frank. What does that mean?
Well, astronomers are backwards in a few of the things that we do. And so before we knew much about, you know, the stars in our sky and the physics of, you know, what was going on with them, they were classified A through Z. And then we started to learn about the sequences of stars and how they change, or they all have different temperatures. And so they were reordered again to, you know, have kind of letters, I guess, but it's not an A through Z type of scale. It's a different kind of scale. So this is an F star we're talking about. Our sun is a G type star.
Okay. And I understand this dimming and brightening in these strange and unpredictable ways is one of the things that's caught the attention of scientists. And at some point, somebody debunked a certain theory that was out there that maybe this was some sort of alien megastructure that was coming and making these changes in the brightness of the star. Tell us about how that theory floated for a while and how it was debunked.
Well, that was one of the many bad ideas that we had to explain the star. But we kind of got to the point where we were, you know, entertaining all options, because nothing that we know about in our universe today could, you know, completely explain the observations that we had. And so the idea came from my colleague Jason Wright at Penn State University. And he was working on testing whether or not you could get or you could find a signal from some sort of artificial structure surrounding a star, this kind of megastructure or Dyson sphere type thing. So imagine like really huge solar panels or some kind of structure that is terraformed. So, you know, whatever beings can like live on it, and this is kind of swirling around the star. So something unnaturally made could be causing events like this. And so this was proposed as, you know, one idea to explain the observations. And this is kind of how the topic got very, it went viral, I guess is the right word, with the public.
Well, that's just a much more fascinating story than maybe what you're saying is maybe it's just dust that's making this change in the brightness. Can you talk a little bit about how you're looking at that theory?
Yeah. So part of the follow-up that we've been doing is measuring the star's brightness over time. And we've been measuring it in different colors of light. And this can be very informative to what kind of material is passing in front of the star. So if you have something that's completely opaque, like a planet or, say, an LEM megastructure, this would block out all colors of light equally. So if you look at the blue light, it would drop down the same amount as you, it would in the red light. What we saw in our observations was that the blue light was being blocked more efficiently than the red light. And this indicates that dust is actually getting in the way and blocking out the star's light.
Wow.
Now, that might, that might not seem as exciting as, you know, an alien megastructure or anything like that, but the mystery still stands that it looks like dust, but it's not like any kind of dust that we know of.
So there's still something to research there. If you'd like to call in and talk with Tabby, we have one more segment. She's going to be staying with us. 1-877-217-5757. 1-877-217-5757. To join the conversation with Tabby Boyajian, the first woman ever to have a star named after her. We'll be back on Talk Louisiana. And welcome back to Talk Louisiana. I'm Julie Baxter Payer, sitting in for Jim Engster this morning. And we're so fortunate to have Tabby Boyajian with us here on Talk Louisiana. She's talking about Tabby's star, the first woman ever, I mean, the first star, rather, ever to be named after a woman. She's doing some amazing research here, right here at LSU, at the LSU Physics Department. Tabby, we've talked about the star and kind of what's unusual about it, but how did it exactly come to be known, really, now around the country as Tabby's star?
Well, it is kind of a funny story, I guess. The news about the star kind of went viral, and lots of reporters were calling all around to all sorts of astronomers. And one reporter was talking to my colleague, Jason Wright, and instead of saying KIC 846-2852, because that doesn't really roll off your tongue very well, he said Tabby Star, and that actually went into print. And after that, it just kind of caught on, and there you have it.
And then eventually you were called by CNN, who said you were one of the top 10 space stories of 2018. Did you ever imagine you'd be there?
I did not expect that at all.
How did you get into physics? What inspired you?
Well, I think my inspiration actually comes from close in. So the people that I know, my parents in particular, they always taught me to be myself and to think freely and, you know, to do what makes me happy. When I was in college and my professors in college were all very supportive, especially in the physics department. And this was something that that I found very exciting and, you know, came easily to me. And I just, you know, I started studying physics and astronomy and I went with it. I loved it.
Do you find many other women in your field?
I think the diversity of the field is changing over time for the better. But you know, physics in itself is not the best representative speaking in terms of diversity, but it is getting better.
And you're making part of that difference. We're going to be joined now by David on line one. And David, do you have a question for Tabby?
Yes, and I love this topic. I had an excellent physics professor at the University of New Orleans many years ago that got me interested in the cosmos. You know, recently, most people who study the cosmos believe there were maybe 200 billion galaxies in the universe. That's been increased because of new satellite technology to perhaps over 2 trillion. But we can only see light that has reached us. Maybe some of the light from some of those galaxies beyond that point haven't reached us yet. So could there theoretically be an infinite amount of galaxies in the universe?
Thank you for your question, David. Tabby?
The universe is quite large. Like, we think that, you know, the best estimates that we have of how many galaxies and stars are in it is continually being modified. But, you know, I think an interesting thing to remember is that the kind of stuff that we can see, the galaxies and the stars and the dust and all that, only make up 4% of the whole mass of the universe. The rest is dark energy and dark matter.
Wow.
Which is pretty mind-blowing to think about.
Right. And certainly something to inspire a career, I guess, in your case.
Absolutely, yes.
Tell us about the Planet Hunters. I've read about maybe a citizen scientist group that's helping to support you. Tell us about who the Planet Hunters are.
So the Planet Hunters is a citizen science group, so it's an online forum that shows data from NASA missions and calls on volunteers to use your mind's ability for pattern recognition to pick out interesting things. And so this effort was established by my colleague Deborah Fisher up at Yale University to look at data from the Kepler Space Telescope, which is how Tabby's star was discovered. And it has recently changed hands into folks at Oxford who are using data from the TESS Space Telescope that was just launched a few months ago.
Wow.
And so we just call on volunteers from the public. You don't need any kind of training, formal training or anything like that. You just kind of, you know, just look at the data and see if you can find interesting things. And we've found, you know, dozens and dozens of planets. We found this, you know, one interesting star. We found many other interesting things. And so it's really kind of neat how, you know, the public can engage in this sort of thing and actually do science and contribute to it.
Do you have kids, students, like high school, middle school age involved in this?
Anybody can do it. So my own kids are 7 and 9, and they can do it. My mom can do it. anybody can do it. They just got to have, you know, an interest in, you know, whatever kind of topic that they want to contribute to in citizen science.
And where do they go to find out more about Planet Hunters?
PlanetHunters.org.
Okay.
Is the website, and that is under the Zooniverse Collaboration. Okay. And so the Zooniverse Collaboration hosts the Galaxy Zoo and a couple dozen other citizen science projects that are all very diverse, but kind of using the same method of, you know, calling on volunteers and using crowdsourcing to identify interesting things that computers actually can't do that well.
Wow. Wow. What is next for you in your research? Do you think you'll be spending a lot more time on this star, or do you have other goals that you'd like to reach?
Well, this star does, we have a lot to learn about this star. We're collecting a lot of data. We're still collecting data on it. And so this is definitely one of the priorities I'll have for at least the next decade or so. But I also run other research programs here at LSU. We look at kind of nearby stars using a special technique called interferometry, and we can measure their fundamental properties very, very well. And so this is something that I've been pioneering this project for the past decade or so.
Are you seeing an increase in interest among students in taking physics courses and going into that field in astronomy? Do you see a rise in interest among students or no?
Oh, it's hard for me to say because I'm a bit junior, and so I don't really have the kind of baseline of of that perspective.
Okay. And how do you see Louisiana in the world of science? I mean, you talk about your communications with folks at Yale and Oxford, and is Louisiana sort of maintaining a profile in the world of your research?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely something that it takes contributions from all around the country. It doesn't really matter where you are, especially now that the internet is live and you can get data pretty much on your laptop from robotic telescopes, say, around the world. It's not something that, you know, you need to be, you know, on a high mountaintop, which Louisiana does not have.
not many mountains in Louisiana, no.
But yeah, so we put telescopes on top of mountains, but you know that doesn't hold Louisiana back from contributing to major science efforts such as this one.
Well, I guess in a way that helps because scientific research could be based out of here in Louisiana, no matter what our topography. I mean, it just helps us to be able to maybe build a better place in that research.
Right, and you know we do have the out in Livingston, we have the LIGO facility, which is, you know, contributed a, you know, enormous amount of knowledge to our understanding of physics with the detection of gravitational waves. And so, I mean, there is a lot of science that is done here in Louisiana as well.
How can the public support your research in terms of, are there special asks we should make of, I don't know, our state funding or our universities? How can the public support you?
Well, in my research field, we run a blog that kind of posts updates on the star and what's going on. We do have a donation page for contributions to Telescope Time. If, you know, you have a couple extra bucks, you can throw it that way. And, you know, just...
Where is that page?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's www.wheresdeflux.com.
Like F-L-U-X?
F-L-U-X.
Okay.
Yes, that was my nickname for the star, the WTF star. It didn't really catch on. Tabby's star was more cute, I guess.
Well, Tabby's star has certainly caught on, and we thank you for your time this morning, Tabby. It's been a wonderful interview. Thank you for what you're doing for science and for our world.